Happy Monday, part two. This is Pam Stack, your host, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. It is a wonderful thing when I can have two amazing authors in one night who are both releasing their fantastic books tomorrow. You don't get any luckier than this. Alex Segura is with me. He's my homeboy from Miami, same as me. He writes the Pete Fernandez novels. We're going to talk to him in just a second, so don't go away. Proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. My friend Alex Segura is quite the talented guy. He not only writes excellent crime fiction novels, but he also is I don't even know how to describe it, a comic strip artist, I suppose. We're going to go ahead and talk to him about that because he writes in the Archie series of comic books, which I remember from 101 years ago when I was little, the only comic book strip that I was, or comic book I was allowed to read. Please welcome to the studio my friend, best-selling author, Alex Segura. Alex, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having
me. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. Yeah, no, this is great. I'm glad we were doing it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really sorry about messing up the books and everything. I only read a few a year, about 400, so it's really hard for me to keep track. You know, I'm putting up the episode, I'm going, damn, this book sounds familiar, and I know it doesn't release till tomorrow. Why does it sound so familiar? And I'm like, oh, you dummy. You sent me a PM and said, you know, thanks, but that's not the new book. So I apologize for that. We're going to be talking tonight about Dangerous Ends, the newest Pete Fernandez novel. And also I want to talk about what's happening with you, because you just told me you're doing a really great event with another mutual friend of ours, Lori Rader Day, who is just as funny as the day is long. Tell me about that. What are you and Lori doing together?
Lori is awesome, and we're actually releasing Day Twins. Her book, The Day I Died, comes out tomorrow as well. And we're doing an event at the
triplets.
Strand.
Jeffrey Deaver comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, Jeffrey Deaver comes out tomorrow. So we're doing an event at the Strand in New York with two other great authors, Reed Farrell Coleman, who's Gus Murphy books. So, you know, the one that just came out is really stellar, What You Break.
Yes.
And Julia Dahl's Conviction is another great book. And she'll be there. So it'll be a fun panel and Q&A. And it's always neat when your friends are also successful authors and you can kind of just kick back and talk about the craft. So I think it'll be fun, I hope.
It will be. I saw Reed 3 weeks ago, I think. He was down here at Sleuthfest, so that was a fun time. And, of course, he's the big draw. And I actually moderated a panel that had 8 people at it, and he had the other 500. So, you know, it is the way it is.
he's a great gentleman.
And
and
he looks great, by the way. Reed is just in fighting shape. He looks great. So it was really nice seeing him. And he was very generous with his time. We did a live interview from the floor, so that was fun. But let's talk about you. I want to talk about I swear to God, I don't know how he does it. I really don't know how he does it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about you, and I want to talk about Archie Comics. As I said when I was introducing you, when I was little, we were not allowed to read comic books, except we could read Archie comic books. I don't know why my folks were like that. You know, I grew up in a very strict Catholic household and went to Catholic school and all, and I want to say that's what it is, but it wasn't. I don't know. My parents had this idea that comic books – was not really reading, and you know, it wasn't good for you. So, but we could occasionally get a comic book. I mean, we had to borrow one and all from a friend.
And it would be an Archie book.
So, it was an Archie book. It had to be an Archie book because if Mom caught us without, you know, it was whatever the punishment of the day was. How did you get started doing this?
Well, I grew up reading comics. I mean, I think my first comic was an Archie comic that I got at the grocery store. I guess I was sick or something. My mom bought me some Archies. And, you know, time passed, and I got into other comics and superhero stuff. And as I got older, I started out in journalism, you know, as a reporter, as a copy editor. And eventually I transitioned to PR, or public, you know, publicity. And that's what I got. That's when I got into comics as a career. And so I started working at DC Comics, which publishes Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman. And then I moved over to Archie. So I've been at Archie for some time. And they let me write some stuff. So I write a few books here and there, stuff like Archie Meets Ramones and Archie Meets Kiss. And I'm doing a book on the Archies, you know, because, of course, they're all friends and they all happen to be in a band together. So I'm doing a book about the Archies, which will be fun.
Are you the illustrator as well, or do you simply provide the, well, not simply, but do you provide the text? I'm not sure
how
it works.
Yeah, I'm just the writer, not the artist. So the writer puts together a script, which is kind of similar in format to a screenplay, and then you hand that to the artist, and they draw it, and then it goes. It's a kind of a conveyor belt of talents, and then it goes to the letterer, who puts in the word balloons, and then a colorist, who adds the color, and then an editor who looks it over. So it's a fun process.
Archie has changed a lot since I was a kid.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, but is there still the traditional Archie around for young kids who want to read it?
Yeah, the good thing about Archie as it's evolved is that there's still that classic style. And you can, if you pick up a digest at a grocery store or a Walmart, it'll still be drawn in that classic style, family-friendly stories, and very accessible, whereas the other stuff, the kind of more comic shop stories are, I don't want to say aged up, they're just drawn a little differently, the storytelling is a little bit more serialized, and it's more, there's got a tinge more of teen drama, and it's still got the funny and the comedy, so you can still recognize the characters.
Which came first, the comics or the books?
For me, I don't know. You know, I was always a pretty voracious reader. I probably read crime fiction a little bit earlier than I should have, but it worked out, you know.
Sure.
Stuff like Sherlock Holmes. Yeah, you know, so I have a very clear memory of picking up a copy of The Godfather when I was maybe 8 or 9, and just, you know, your mind is blown away. You read this stuff, and it kind of transports you into another world. And at the same time, I was getting into comics and that kind of storytelling. So it's always been a two-track thing for me. So to be able to do both is really a dream come true.
Let's talk about your very first book in the Pete Fernando series, because this happens to be one of my favorite series ever. So start from the beginning. Thank you. Well, you know, a lot of it is I have a lot of affection for from Miami because we're both from there. And so I am familiar with Miami and the culture and the rhythm of the city, which is different than any place. It's even though you live in New York, Miami is small, obviously, compared to New York, but it still has its own rhythm and flow. And it's very unique to Miami. So it endeared me immediately to read Pete's stories based in Miami. Did you start writing the Pete Fernandez novels when you were still living in Miami, or was it after you moved to New York?
It was almost a byproduct of being homesick. It was a few months after I moved to New York, which was about, I want to say, 10 years ago now. And that's when I first put pen to paper and thought about doing it. And a lot of it was, you know, missing Miami. And I think the first year in New York is really difficult for anyone. It's just such a sensory overload. You're in a whole new place. You're in a whole new job, whole new place. And at the same time, I was reading these books by authors like Laura Lippman or George Pelicanos and Dennis Lehane, and they were so strong in terms of place. You know, it's not a Tess Monahan book without Baltimore, and it's not a Scudder book without New York. So as I'm getting immersed in these stories, I start to think about maybe doing it myself, and there was no other way to do it than writing a Miami story because it's where I'm from. It's the city I know. At the time, I never really lived anywhere else. So Miami becomes such a big part of the series. You can't really have Pete Fernandez without Miami.
Or at least part of it, because it is kind of an ancillary character no matter what. Which came out first, Silent City or Down the Darkest Street?
Silent City came out first. It was published by a small house in 2013. And then when I moved over to Polis Books, Jason Pinter's company, they reissued Silent City a month before Down the Darkest Street. So now they're all, you know, packaged nicely and have the same format. And it's been a really busy time, but it's great to see them all together. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're beautifully, it's beautifully branded. The artwork is excellent. It's just exceptional. I want to talk about Silent City because that kicks off the entire series. And for those folks who have not read you before, I'd like to talk a little bit about Pete and where he comes from.
Sure.
So would you tell a little bit about Silent City and how we get to know Pete?
Yeah, I mean, Silent City starts off and you meet Pete and he's waking up from a bender. He's not in a good place when you meet him. He's lost his job and had to move back to Miami. His father's passed away. His fiance's left him. And he's drinking a lot. And it's one of those things where you reach these highs. He was like a star investigative sports reporter in New Jersey. And then to come crashing down, you know, and you basically have nothing. He has no romantic life, no real job aside from, like, editing copy when he used to be the one writing the copy. So his life is pretty drudgery. It's pretty full of drudgery. And at that point, a coworker finds him and says, hey, he used to be really this talented guy, this investigator. I'd love for you to help me find my daughter. She's missing. And so Pete kind of takes that as an omen of, you know, he's got to do something different. And so he starts investigating this missing person. What he doesn't know is that it ties into a much bigger Miami kind of urban legend, which is the Silent Death, this kind of killer of killers. The guy the different mobs hire to kill other mobsters when they don't want to be traced. And so Pete finds himself entangled in that and way over his head. But instead of being a logical person and going to the police, he starts investigating it himself and at the same time realizes that this case was his father's last case because his father was a Miami homicide detective. And so there are a lot of, you know, there's a lot of weight to the story for Pete. He's basically solving his dad's last case and at the same time kind of learning how to be a detective himself and still dealing with a lot of personal garbage, you know, his own addictions and his own relationship problems. So I think it's a pretty heavy read and, it was definitely a learning experience to write.
It's brilliant, though. It's such a good read. And you know, as I said, having coming from the city and knowing some of these people not in a friendly way, but just knowing Miami and knowing the undertones and all, it just resonates. It really does. So you wrote the next book in this series called Down the Darkest Street. You have to understand in Miami you could be bathed in light at midnight or you could be in the pitch blackness where you can't see your hand in front of you. It's an appropriate title just because it's so fitting for Miami, but it is also appropriate for the story because Pete is just a basket case. He really is a basket case. He just cannot get out of his own way. He really is his own worst enemy through this book. Tell us just a thumbnail on it because I really do want to get to Dangerous Ends and talk about
that.
For sure.
Yeah, and the thing with Silent City is when you read it, and I'm not spoiling anything, but it does end with a flicker of hope, and you think, okay, maybe this guy who's had a tough run is going to get his, you know, life together and give this PI thing a go. And from page one of Down the Darkest Street, you realize that's not going to happen. It literally starts
that's
out
not
with
happening.
Him getting pounded and beaten into senselessness in the first few pages. And what I really wanted to do with that book was turn it up to 11 and really show that he had gotten himself into a situation that he hadn't bargained for. I mean, you can't just say, I'm a PI and I'm going to start investigating these crimes without paying some kind of price. And what happens is his hubris really takes him into dark places. It's no joke intended, but he starts investigating these murders that are way too similar to a serial killer. And he starts thinking, okay, I've got this figured out. But then he realizes this killer that he's investigating has been dead for years. He was electrocuted in Florida. And so this is a killer who's paying homage to another serial killer. And, you know, it's a battle between his ego thinking that he can fix a problem or solve the problem. And at the same time, you know, his ex-girlfriend's moved back in. He's trying to stay sober but not really succeeding. And it all kind of comes crashing down when this killer finally notices Pete and his partner and decides to point his rage at them. And, you know, it's about, you know, the mystery, but it's also about him dealing with his own darkness, which is not easy, as anyone can attest.
And you know, I think it would have been disingenuous had he recovered after book one. It would not have been as realistic. So he's really had to go balls to the wall in this book. But now comes.
Yeah, there's really this. Sorry to derail you, but there's a scene in Things on the Darkest Street that was really, really difficult to write. It's just because you start to love and have affection for these characters and. There's a point, and you probably know where it is, when he just kind of loses it and just goes down the tubes, and you feel, you're like, wow, is he going to be able to pull himself out of the gutter here? And he does to in his own way, but I, like you said, it would have been disingenuous to just have him say, I'm sober after the first book, and I'm a detective now. It's not that easy, and it's really about showing his own kind of stumbling and climbing out of his own darkness, but it's not a one-step thing, so...
No, it isn't. And that's what I appreciated about the second book so much. The interesting thing to me is that I think we're just starting to peel away layers of Pete Fernandez and the never mind his conflicts, you know, that there are many, but he has so many unresolved things going on, and I like that. I like that you're showing us more. We're getting to go deeper as you're telling the stories of crime in Miami. This is crime fiction. It's very dark crime fiction, and it's as it should be. So, you know, as a reader, I appreciate the fact that you are doing that. I want to talk about Dangerous Ends because this book has won so many reviews, wonderful reviews. Garnered so much praise that it just goes on and on and on and on. Now, most of you know Ace Atkins has been on this show before. He writes his own standalones, but he also writes for the Robert B. Parker Estate. This is what he had to say. He said, this is a real throwback to the kind of books I love. Segura captures the spirit of modern Miami with its complicated past and conflicted present. Pete Fernandez is the perfect hero to walk the main streets of both worlds. He really is. And he is so right. And Ace, with his southern accent, I can just hear him saying that. I love the fact that we have several mutual friends who have also blurbed for your book. And undoubtedly one of the most famous is Laura Lippman, who said so many writers have tried to reinvent the PI novel in recent years that it's refreshing to be reminded it was never broken. That's high praise from Laura Lippman.
Yeah.
Booklist, who never says anything nice about anybody, said, you have an edgy storytelling style, snappy dialogue, and a cast of salty characters. It's really fine. It's really a fine crime story. And it really is. And it goes on and on
Thank you.
And someone who I really have a lot of respect for is Aline Cogdell, who writes for the Sun Sentinel. And she said, Down the Darkest Street is strongest when it focuses on Pete trying to rebuild his life and sometimes failing, which is just what we were talking about in the first two books. So now comes Dangerous Ends, and Pete is kind of, you know, getting his feet a little bit steadier. He's, you know, he's not real thrilled about the job, but, you know, he's okay until.
Yeah, when you find him in the opening pages of the opening chapter where you see him, he's accepted his role. He's accepted the fact that he's a PI. He's working as a detective. But the thing is being a private detective is not always citywide capers and solving serial killers and saving the mayor's daughter or what have you. It's a lot of kind of grunt work. You know, it's peeping through windows. It's finding missing pets. It's insurance fraud. And so he's dealing with that, but he's also kind of enjoying it because this guy's been through a lot. You know, if Silent City and Down the Darkest Street happened, you know, over the course of 2 years, he's been through the ringer twice and could probably use a breather. So he's, you know, he's dealing with sobriety. He's dealing with living a kind of Spartan, simple life and building from zero. The problem with that is built a reputation as the guy you go to solve these kind of crimes. And what happens is Kathy Bentley, who is his partner in these endeavors, comes up to him and says, I've got this huge story that I want you to help me with. And it's the case of Gaspar Varela, who's a ex-Miami police officer who's in jail for murdering his wife. And the case is one of these controversial situations where he's been convicted, but there's this huge support system claiming he's innocent. And a lot of that was inspired by stuff like all these true crime cases that, you know, build these almost social media movements. Some true, some not true, but a little bit of Serial, a little bit of Making a Murderer, and that idea that, you know, everyone's a detective and everyone can contribute to the case. And so this is kind of like that. And his daughter, Maya, has hired them to hopefully find a sliver of evidence that can exonerate him, that can lead to a new trial and hopefully exonerate her father. But the problem is Pete doesn't know if the guy's innocent. So he goes into it with mixed feelings. And also suddenly as they start investigating this crime, they become the number one target of this gang of murderers called Los Enfermos, which means the sick. And they're a deadly street gang. And they've also been putting out hits for the Castro regime since the 80s. And somehow it ties back into Pete's own family heritage. And the book actually starts with a flashback to late 1959 Cuba. And you meet Pete's grandfather and you find out, you know, what the backstory for Pete's own family is. And at some point, the two threads weave together. And hopefully it works out in a meaningful way. But I wanted to show more than just one linear mystery.
I was just thinking as I was listening to you talk, and you are really an exceptionally talented writer, Alex, because you're pulling on all these different threads and using a lot of, you know, Miami's own kind of infamous past. Have been some, you know, ripped from the headlines stories that a lot of people have maybe expounded on. But I think maybe you're having been a native there, and you have to grow up, I think, in Miami to understand the importance of all the little threads that you're pulling together, that you said you're weaving together so that they come to, you know, they're together at the end. I like listening to you talk. I'd like to know a little bit more about your writing process. I spoke earlier to Jeffrey Deaver, who is a meticulous plotter. He plans out his books. His research and plots, the advance on the book before he sits down to write his you know, outlines and all. It usually takes him about 8 months. So
wow.
He generally puts out a book a year, maybe a little bit more. Maybe he'll do a novella in between, or maybe he's writing short stories and all. Plus, he's just elected president of the Mystery Writers of America. But I wonder
he's
for you. Yeah, he is. Are you also one of those guys who kind of outlines a little bit, or what is your process like? Because I'm not worried so much about you, your research, because I think you've got that nailed down because you kind of lived it. And
yeah,
anything
you know,
else,
funny,
I think
the research kind of happens organically. If I find a subject that
yes.
I get really obsessed over and I end up reading about it, you know, the Gaspar Varela thread in Dangerous End is very akin to the Jeffrey McDonald case. I don't know how familiar you are with
yes.
that. But it's,
oh, yes,
it's the Green,
very.
Yeah, the Green Beret
yes.
who killed his wife and
right.
kids. And it's always been this contentious thing where many people said, oh, he's innocent. He was framed by this kind of Manson-like cult. And then there's the other side that says, no, the evidence points to him being 100% guilty. But, you know, when they're so divided. And so I read a lot of books on that, and even the books kind of go all over the place. There's the Joe McGinnis book that says, you know, he's an egomaniac that, of course, killed his wife. There's the Janet Malcolm book that basically says Joe McGinnis was wrong because he embedded himself in Jeffrey McDonald's camp and was misleading. And then it's just all over. So I ended up falling into that sinkhole of reading all those books, and that ends up playing into your work. But it's never an overt thing where I kind of map out the books. And the Cuba reading was really just reinforcing stuff I knew and I lived, but also wanted to know more kind of in an academic way. So I read a lot about the exile community. I read a lot about Cuba in the 50s and the Castro regime. So all of that was just kind of supplementary to what I already wanted to write about. But I am I do outline, but not to the point where I don't have room to pivot if inspiration strikes or
right.
if a character
sure.
starts doing something else, I let them do it. And you still have the framework, but you never want to just say, oh, I can't do that because, you know, chapter 7 is supposed to be this.
Exactly. I see what you're saying.
I wish I had the kind of fearlessness to just write on the page and go blindly, but maybe that's down the line. But as of now, I like having the support system of an outline, even though it's not too intense.
Said something really important. You said something really important. You said, I wish I could go blindly, but perhaps that's what it is. And so you are, you know, meant to be one who plans out your books. And like you said, leaving enough wiggle room for a pivot if you need to. It seems to me that a lot of authors that I speak to really have no problem with that. You know, Russell Blake comes on this show quite a bit. He's on 3 or 4 times a year, maybe more. I don't know, maybe 5 or 6. But
wow,
he plots his books. He said, "How in the hell would I couldn't write a book without that?" It's like kind of, you know, jumping in your car and saying, "Okay, I'm going on vacation," and not having even thought about it. I've got the week off.
Exactly.
Let me get in my car and go someplace. You know, I mean, there's a lot to be said for just going, but you've got to say, well, I'm going to stay in Florida and I'm going to drive all over. I'm going to go to New York and I'm going to, you know, take all the subways to go wherever I can. You can't be let it going in the wind. And there has to be
It's so funny because even the outline has to be kind of an organic document. Like, I outline in the sense that I break down the plot and I have an idea and I know the ending. I know where Pete's going to end up as a person. I know what his journey is going to be, and I also know what the plot's going to be. So it's kind of filling in the space between. Even today I was tinkering with the outline on the next book, and I had an epiphany, and it dealt with an actual Miami crime. And I was like, well, why don't I use that? Why don't I, you know, research this thing that actually was a huge crime when I was in high school and was this big controversial thing, and it kind of fit in so nicely with what I was doing anyway, but as a real Miami and personal touch to the whole thing. And so you have to be flexible. You have to allow yourself the room, and you have to let your characters do what they're going to do. But at the same time, like you said, you have to have a roadmap. You have to have an itinerary,
sure.
And you have to know where you're going.
Are you concerned about killing off a character that people like, a good character, would you be willing to kill off, not obviously not Pete, but would you be willing to kill off a maybe secondary character?
You know, it's funny, and probably the people that read the books are going to gasp in fear, but there, a book doesn't go by where I don't consider killing Pete off. It's just the realist in me is like, how many times is he going to save the city and not get a bullet,
right?
You know? And the same goes for his supporting cast. You know, there's Kathy Bentley, who's a reporter, but she's, you know, it's not like she has military training. Neither of them do. They don't have
right.
the kind of experience where they're built to survive these things. But a book doesn't go by where I don't think about, you know, being realistic about how these guys go through it. So that's what tells me also that the series can't go on for like 20 or 25 books. It's just not realistic that way. But at the same time, I have to stay true to what I think is going to happen. It's a challenge. It's not something I don't grapple with each time I write one of these.
Do you, when you start planning your next book, which you obviously have, are you thinking about how much longer you're going to be interested in doing Pete? In other words, can we count on seeing another Pete book for the foreseeable future, or will you do a standalone and maybe give it a rest? I don't know how it works for you.
You know, so far it's still interesting. It's still exciting for me to write about Pete. So I don't feel a need for a break. I have at least two more in the hopper. And as you read Dangerous Ends, you see that there's set up for the next one. There's references made, there's characters introduced, and it's not to the point
sure.
where if you don't read Dangerous Ends, you can't read the next one. But there's a point at the end of the book where you could just go straight into the next one. It just leads you right into the next one. And I wanted to do that partially because, you know, comic books is kind of my background, and that's why Silent City is very much the origin story. It's like the first issue you find out about the hero and what makes him a detective,
sure.
which is not as common as you think it is in detective fiction. A lot of times you start in the middle and the guy's already established or she's already established and you already kind of know the score. But I wanted to show
right.
how he kind of ramped up. And he really doesn't become the detective until Dangerous Ends. And
right.
at that point, I really wanted to show, well, what's next? And part of that is about weaving book four in book three.
Interesting. Yeah, I like that. I like the idea. Before we go any further, I want to invite callers to
sure.
give us a ring. The number is 347-633-9609. I'm going to give someone a copy of Alex's new book, Dangerous Ends, to the first person who calls, 347-633-9609. I'm speaking to best-selling author Alex Segura, who is a native Miamian like me. We are
yeah.
transplanted out of there. I still stayed in Florida, although, and Alex is down here a lot. I have to say that.
I'm down,
you know,
there at least
it's all
three
good.
Times a year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know you are, and it's great. Tell everybody where they can find you on the webs while we're taking a little break here for a second.
Yeah, you can find me at alexsegura.com. I'm pretty active on Twitter at Alex_Segura, and I have a Facebook author page that I try to keep vibrant. You know, social media is always a challenge.
Yep.
But, I'm trying to keep my website updated, and Twitter and Facebook are the best spots.
Yeah, you're pretty active on Twitter. I like that. I am not. I mean, I have spurts where I go through it, so, you know, I all praise and glory to anybody who can keep up with it all. I just can't. I have too many pages I have to look at. You know, we have 21 pages in the network, so.
Wow, Twitter's fun.
It's
like having a conversation in a very crowded room, whereas Facebook, I think, is a little more intimate. You're kind of talking to your friends or people you know in real life. But it's each one's got its own pratfalls and cool stuff, I think.
Now, you also write a blog, and you do it on – you really are interested in all the arts because you talk about movies and television and music. And even I see a lot of stuff on your Facebook page. You are really up with what's happening in entertainment, in all the arts. so, and I can appreciate that. But you also have a newsletter. What do you talk about in your newsletter?
The newsletter is something that, you know, it just became this thing over the last couple of years where I saw a lot of newsletters cropping up. And I've always tried to keep up a blog, but the newsletter struck me as a really unique way to just connect directly with fans or friends or people you know. But I didn't want my newsletter to just be promotional. I didn't want to just talk about, you know, I do talk about this stuff. I do talk about when my book's coming out and stuff I do in interviews and whatnot. But I also wanted to use that as a tool to talk about what I'm watching or what books I'm reading or, you know, what articles I found on the internet that are really interesting. So it's a way to share that and also just to talk to other authors and spotlight books that I'm enjoying. And I've gotten a lot out of it. I've made friends through the newsletter, other authors that I've enjoyed their work. So I've reached out to them and said, hey, do you want to chat? And, you know, you can relate to this, I'm sure. You start to build these relationships with people you've never met.
Yes.
And it's a nice way to amplify books that you enjoy. It's fun.
Agree.
And it also adds a layer of interest to what you're talking about. It's not just promotional. I'm not just talking about, please buy my book, even though that's always going to be a part of anything you do as an author.
Right. Well, this is your baby, and you're offering it up for sale, and so you need to tell people about it. There's certainly nothing wrong with that. I just am thrilled to know, Ann, that you came on the show before you start your official tour tomorrow, which is your official launch date. Where are you going to stay in New York for a while? You're going to stay there, and then maybe I know you're going to VoucherCon because – all of you go to VoucherCon. I am not going this year, much to my chagrin. I would love to, but...
Oh, next year. I'll see you next year at VoucherCon for sure.
You'll see me, yeah, for sure. You'll see it because it's near me. Are you going to be doing any book tours at all, do you think? Or are you going to do local signings mostly for the time being? Because I know you have babies. You've got babies.
I know, yeah.
So it's not like you can leave. Yeah, I know. God bless you. And you're still speaking in complete sentences.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, the first few months are a blur. I don't remember a lot, which is a bummer because you want to remember everything. But it's just, you know, you don't sleep. You don't really eat right. You're just kind of hyper-focused on this little creature that just appeared. But I'm doing some.
Ask your wife. The creature did not just appear. Ask your wife. The creature did not appear. You had a lot to do with it, I promise you.
Maybe
you may
I
not
want to
mention that.
Quote back to her. Yeah, I won't mention that.
Right.
But I've got a lot of events in New York. We're doing the launch tomorrow at the Mysterious Bookshop, and then I'm doing an event at the Astoria Bookshop. Yeah, doing an event at the Astoria Bookshop with Julia Dahl and Rob Hart, who you know, and Tommy Pluck, and then we're doing that Strand event.
Okay.
But I'm hopping down
Tommy
to
come on.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great, and I'm hopping down to Miami for Books and Books in May, and then also doing Murder on the Beach.
Are you
but
really?
I've got some other
when
stuff.
In May are you coming?
When
are you going to be here in May?
I think it's May 11th and 12th, so I'll be on at Books and Books in Coral Gables and also Murder. Yeah, you should come by.
I will, actually. You know what? Because my summer schedule has changed, and I'm not working on Fridays. Do you know which one you're going to be at? You're going to be at Murder or Books and Books, either on the 11th or the 12th?
Right, yeah.
I'll send you
all the dates. Yeah, I'm blanking on the order
send
of
me
it.
Some
I,
dates.
Think
I will come over. I actually will.
Yeah.
I'll go to either up to Joanne's shop or I'll go over to Kaplan's shop, whichever one.
And I'm doing both of those events with Steph Post, who wrote this great Florida noir crime fiction book called Lightwood, which you know probably, but she's excellent. And so it'll be a fun way to kind of cross-promote. And I'm doing Murder, a Mysterious Galaxy in San Diego in July, and doing an event in D.C. later in May. So I am hopping around a little bit more than I did last year. But, it's a challenge, but it's fun. It's fun to meet readers. And I like to do the co-author events just because you get to cross-populate your audience a bit.
Absolutely. And it's nice to be able to go to the booksellers and meet them too, because, you know, without them, really, you're screwed. If you don't go to these stores, these are the people who recommend books. Although I have to tell you, I was in the Barnes & Noble near me and I was recommending books to some guy who was standing there.
Wow.
So, but, you know, I thought, oh, I interviewed him and him. It was really nice to be able to do that. I rarely go into bookstores except to the indies. I rarely go into a Barnes & Noble. But someone gave me a gift card, so, you know, I had to buy books for someone.
Yeah, having those indie bookstores and having the booksellers actually know you and know your material, the kind of direct communication is so different. It's not like just logging onto a website. As valuable as that is, having a bookseller that knows you, that knows your books, knows your personality, and can say, hey, this is probably hand-selling your books, it's priceless.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I'm definitely going to come over to – I'll see you over on the East Coast. I've just marked you down on my calendar, so you'll get in touch with me and send me those dates. Alex Segura, best-selling author of the Pete Fernandez books, his new book, Dangerous End, releases tomorrow. Go to the Zon, go to your bookseller, any place where you buy books, go and find it. Alex Segura, he's terrific. One of the most talented authors I know. And come back again. And, hey, why don't you and Steph Post get together on here and you interview her, talk about cross-promoting.
Yeah, let's do that. And if you want, you can introduce us at one of the events if the schedules sync up.
Yeah, let's do that. But I'd love to have you two in conversation and me just sit back and listen. How about that?
Yeah, we'll make it happen. That'd be great.
Okay. Thank you for being with me, Alex. Happy Passover to your wife and her family, and happy Easter to you and to everybody else. I'm glad you came on. Thanks, and keep me posted, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks so much, Pam. It's always a treat.
Thanks. It's a pleasure talking to you. Take care. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And that's our show for tonight. I'll be back on Wednesday with Donna Galanti, who writes for all ages. She writes children's books, she writes young adult, she writes adult. It's going to be fun. I thank you for being with me tonight, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.